and welcome to the MJA podcast. I'm Kate Swanell and I am your host. Today our topic is proton pump inhibitors and why primary care physicians might think about deprescribing them in some patients. My guest is Professor Peter Bietzer from the University of Copenhagen in Denmark. He is the author of an MJA editorial on this subject, which is published on 12 November and is available at mja.com.au. Why are proton pump inhibitors so good at their job?
Proton pump inhibitors are really pretty smart drugs. They are designed in a way that they will be trapped in the parietal cells in the stomach. Those are the cells that produce hydrochloric acid, tric acid. And the proton pump inhibitors will be concentrated inside these cells. And the drug will bind to the enzymes that produce the gastric acid and more or less destroy the enzyme, so that new enzymes need to be produced by the cells before gastric acid can be produced again. Smart drugs with a very, very specific mode of action, which is really only working in a specific cell type within the stomach.
So they're very effective. They've been around a long time. Why do you think their use has increased lately?
Yeah, the use both measured by the number of people using them and the amount of drug that is being used has increased year by year for the past 25 years, as long as we have had PPIs. And it's really not clear why the use is going up year by year. In Denmark, for example, over the past 20 years, I think the use has been more than 10 times as much, both measured in the amount of drug and in the number of people using it. In most European countries, approximately 10% of the adult population use a PPI within a given year. And why prescribing has increased, we are still wondering, because during those years, the number of peptic ulcers have decreased dramatically, but in the same time, the number of patients who are suffering from gastroesophageal reflux disease has increased, although not as much as the decrease in peptic ulcer disease. But apparently, the increasing use is mainly explained by patients who are chronic PPI users. And this may be because many doctors see PPIs as very safe drugs, and they give PPIs for very many indications. And they also try to protect, especially elderly people, from developing peptic ulcer disease with the complications attached to that disease, such as hemorrhage or perforation.
You say that it's being prescribed for a lot of different indications. Are some of those inappropriate use of PPIs?
Yes. Many, many studies have shown a lot of inappropriate use of PPIs. I think many, as I said before, many physicians see PPIs as very safe drugs. Yep. So if you don't know what else to do, you sometimes prescribe a PPI, say to the patient, try this for 4 weeks. If your symptoms doesn't go away, then we'll try something else.
Right.
And many patients have these drugs for, upset stomach or nausea or many other unspecific GI symptoms where PPIs don't work. And unfortunately, some patients get, so to speak, hooked to PPIs because when you have taken a PPI daily for 4 or 8 weeks, there is a risk of acid rebound. The stomach will produce more acid when you stop the PPI, and that extra acid in some persons may elicit acid-related symptoms such as heartburn, acid regurgitations, dyspepsia. Then you take up the PPI again, and then you become a chronic user.
You said that we think the PPIs are a very safe drug. Are we sure about that for long-term use? Do we know what the consequences might be?
Well, I think it's fair to say that even on long-term, these drugs are very safe. There are a couple of issues, and I think it's fair to say that we have known PPIs for 25, 30 years, and you can never be completely sure that there will not be something new coming up later on. But still, I think PPIs are pretty safe. There are some issues. PPIs, they stop the gastric acid secretion, and we mainly produce gastric acid to protect ourselves from infectious bacteria that may give us diarrhea, such as Salmonella and stuff like that. So you have a slightly increased risk of getting a gastroenteritis. There may be some issues with the absorption of calcium and maybe an increased risk of fractures in the elderly. But compared to many other long-term risks for other drugs, I think it's fair to say that PPIs are pretty safe.
So why are we talking about deprescribing them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that we should always consider if a drug is necessary. In patients who are on chronic PPI use and are symptom-free, I think it's fair to reconsider together with the patient, do we need to continue this drug or should we try to stop it? Why put chemicals in your mouth if they're not necessary, even though they're considered safe?
I'm chatting today with Professor Peter Bietza from the University of Copenhagen. Peter's editorial on PPIs is available at mja.com.au. You mentioned acid rebound before. Is that the obvious consequence of stopping PPI use suddenly, abruptly?
Well, we know from physiologic studies that acid rebound will happen in many persons or patients. In some, this extra acid secretion will lead to symptoms. It's not possible to tell beforehand if a particular patient will develop symptoms because of acid rebound hypersecretion. You should take that into consideration. So it's probably important for some patients. There are some studies done in healthy volunteers who have been on a PPI daily for 4 or 8 weeks, and approximately 40% of those who started on their PPI when they were completely symptom-free, they developed some type of acid-related symptoms such as heartburn, acid regurgitation, when they stop the ice. So this is probably also true for patients.
Tapering is the obvious answer to that. What sort of time frame are we talking about for an ideal tapering program?
Yeah. When we tell doctors that they should taper PPI when they want to stop it, this is mainly based on evidence from physiologic studies and not from clinical trials, because the few clinical trials have not been too successful, actually.
No.
Maybe because the tapering period was a bit too short. So tapering should be at least 4 to 8 weeks, in my mind. So slowly stopping the PPI, halving the dose, taking a PPI every second day or maybe even every third day. But, you know, this is based on my empiric evidence and not really on true scientific evidence. I think that would be wise to do that. Tapering, but over quite a long time, 4 to 8 weeks, I would say.
If I'm a general practitioner and I have a patient who's a chronic PPI user, what should I be thinking about saying to them and what action should I be taking to try and get their use down?
First of all, you need to reconsider why is this patient on chronic PPI, because some patients need to be on chronic PPI. Patients with severe gastroesophageal reflux disease with erosions in the esophagus, many of these patients need to have a PPI every day.
Yep.
Many patients need to be on chronic PPI to prevent them from developing peptic ulcer disease, maybe because they are on chronic NSAID or for other reasons. But taking those patients away and then focusing on the patient on chronic PPI who is more or less symptom free, I think you should discuss with the patient, should we try to maybe stop the PPI after a tapering period?
Uh-huh.
Should we try to go away from daily use and over to on-demand use? So you only take your PPI when you or if you develop symptoms, take a PPI each day for as long as you have symptoms, and then you stop again. This on-demand way of using PPIs has been shown very effective in many clinical trials for all PPIs, and many patients do it by themselves because if you don't have symptoms, then you forget to take your PPI, and when symptoms come back, then you restart your PPI. This is actually what patients do, and it is supported by evidence from a number of very good clinical trials.
Can you talk a little about the Australian context? I mean, you mentioned in your editorial the Australian algorithm for reviewing PPI use.
Yeah. This algorithm for reviewing PPIs for patients with reflux disease, I think it's very useful. It's quite simple. It's an easy algorithm to follow. And I think very importantly, you need to focus on that this is PPIs for reflux disease. So some patients may be on chronic PPIs for other reasons, such as preventing peptic ulcer disease, and that's another algorithm. But this is more or less what I said just previously. Review with the patient who is on PPI. If your symptoms are well controlled, then discuss the options of PPIs on demand or even completely stopping the PPI. Also, very importantly, many patients with reflux disease are not completely satisfied, even though they are on a sufficient dose of PPIs. And in some patients where the symptoms are not well controlled, it might be worthwhile to consider endoscopy if they have not already had an endoscopy, just to make sure what is this severe reflux disease, so you need to step up in therapy, prescribe high dose PPI, refer to a specialist maybe for pH metry, considering surgery as another option, stuff like that. You should not be surprised if patients with reflux symptoms are not completely satisfied on PPI therapy. Approximately 20 to 25% of patients have residual symptoms. Some patients accept that. Other patients, they might benefit from adding alginate to the therapy or maybe just antacids when they have breakthrough symptoms. Or going from one daily dose PPIs to twice daily dose, especially in those patients who have symptoms during the nighttime. I think especially for primary care physicians who see many of these patients, it's very important to discuss with the patient the proper way of taking the PPI. So patients who are on one daily dose, they should take that dose in the morning before their meal. And if you go to twice daily, you should take the second dose before the evening meal, not at bedtime. PPIs don't really, they work quite poorly if you take them just before you go to bed.
Thank you.
Okay.
Very much for your time.
Thank you.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.